here with this week's hottest stories in the investment world. This is Zach's Friday Finish Line.
Hello, and welcome to the Zach's Friday Finish Line. I am Ryan McQueenie, a content writer here at Zach's, joined by one of our editors, Maddie Johnson.
Hello, today is Friday, March 2nd. Whoa, already in March.
Short month, yeah.
And we're here to recap this week's biggest stories from the investment and financial world. February ended how it started this week, with renewed fears ushering in volatility throughout the markets. The Dow snapped its longest monthly win streak since the 1950s, while the S&P 500 marked its worst month since January 2016.
Later in the show, we will be covering one of the main causes of these fears, new Fed Chair Jerome Powell's latest congressional testimonies, two different testimonies this week. Powell spooked investors with his foreshadowing of an accelerated rate hike cycle, sending stocks lower midweek.
But before we take a deep dive into those macroeconomic factors influencing Powell's testimony, we have a few other headlines to cover today, starting with some gun rules and gun maker stocks.
Yeah, so this week, the national conversation surrounding gun control reached Wall Street, with several major U.S. companies deciding to change their own rules about gun sales. So on Wednesday, Dick's Sporting Goods kind of started this trend. It announced that it will discontinue the sale of assault-style rifles at its stores, with the company saying that it was, quote-unquote, deeply disturbed by the recent mass shooting at Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Obviously, we mentioned on the show last week, I believe, 17 people killed in the attack. One of a growing number of mass shootings here in the U.S. this year and over the past few years become quite the problem. Authorities have said that the gunman used a legally purchased AR-15 rifle during the attack. We also know that previously the gunman had purchased a weapon at a Dick's Sporting Goods. Was not the AR-15 rifle used in the attack, but I think that was part of the story as well with Dick's making this decision. Maddie, as you pointed out to me before the show, not even the first time Dick's has made such a decision in the wake of the Sandy Hook school shooting a few years ago. Dick's decided to pull AR-15s from Dick's Sporting Goods stores as well as their Field & Stream branded stores. And so from what I understand, that style of rifle was returned to the Field & Stream brand stores just a few months later. So this decision impacting now permanently Dick's Field & Stream stores. And off the top of my head, I believe they have something like 45 to 48 locations of Field & Stream branded stores. These are more like hunting, fishing.
Like Cabela's.
Yeah, kind of. Definitely. There is a section of Dick's, regular Dick's stores that are like that. But yeah, this is like a dedicated store to that kind of vibe. So Dick's CEO, Edward Stack, said some interesting things in the statement. He also urged U.S. regulators to follow suit with a nationwide ban on assault-style rifles and a higher minimum age for gun ownership. And Stack also announced that Dick's will no longer be selling high-capacity magazines or any firearms to persons under the age of 21. And then later, that was on Wednesday. Later on Wednesday, we heard that retail behemoth Walmart was planning to raise the minimum age for gun sales in its own stores to 21, and also pulling items that depict assault-style rifles, including novelty lighters, from its shelves and online stores. That was something I wanted to highlight because something I had seen on my Twitter feed in the wake of this recent attack and kind of the national conversation that has started is a conversation about the fact that this is really only a huge problem in America, and a lot of people kind of highlighting how deeply ingrained gun culture is in this country, and saying like, why are things like lighters? Why can you buy like toy guns and little mm-hmm. lighters that are shaped like AR-15s, like that you don't see that anywhere else but the United States of America? So those types of little gadgets also being pulled from Walmart shelves. And then on Thursday, Kroger, the grocery store giant, announced that it will no longer sell guns to customers under age 21 at its Fred Meyer stores. So I don't think any regular Kroger brand grocery stores sell
guns. Yeah, I was when I saw that, when you sent that link in our we use Skype here at Zach's to work throughout the day, to communicate with each other throughout the day. When you sent that link in our chat, and I was like, does Kroger have a gun section? I was like trying to like think of like where it would be. Is it situated between the fresh produce and the dairy section? Like I was like trying to visualize it.
Yeah.
But that makes more sense.
So the Fred Meyers, I've never been in one, but I believe they're more like a kind of like a Kmart type of vibe. Yeah, that
makes sense.
So raising their minimum age for gun sales to 21. So that's now we're seeing that trend at Walmart, Dick's, and the Fred Meyer branded stores from Kroger. All this news obviously caused a wild week for U.S. gun makers, most notably Sturm Ruger, which trades under the ticker RGR, and American Outdoor Brands, formerly called Smith & Wesson. That ticker is AOBC. That's obviously the legendary brand named there. Those stocks dipped heavily on Wednesday, but then actually interestingly recovered in Thursday morning trading, despite Kroger adding its name to the list of people changing their gun rules. Basically, everything fell off a cliff later in Thursday afternoon trading, but things did get way worse for American Outdoor Brands be subjective there. The American Outdoor Brands, again, that's Smith & Wesson, reported its latest quarterly financial results on Thursday. So one thing to keep in mind here, at the same time that this conversation about gun control is happening, which kind of threatens the business model in the sense that raising the age minimum is going to have a dent on sales to some extent. Making it harder to buy weapons, harder to buy guns is going to have a dent on sales, obviously. But what's also going on for these companies that are reporting, quarters that have already happened is since in 2017, we've seen gun makers struggle because the Republican administration kind of reduces demand for gun owners to go out and buy more guns. So what we saw in 2016 and what we really saw as a major trend throughout the entire Obama administration was kind of this sense that a Democratic White House would result in stricter gun control, which means that people were going out and buying guns ahead of that presumed regulation.
They were stocking up.
Yes, if you will. And then the Trump victory in late 2016 was a huge surprise to everyone. And it resulted in, an entirely Republican government here for 2017, and people just didn't feel the need to go buy guns. So that's also another trend that's impacting gun maker stocks. And we saw that with American Outdoor Brands' earnings report continued in its latest quarter. Earnings actually topped our estimates, adjusted earnings of 9 cents per share, a penny higher than the consensus estimate. However, revenue figures of $157.4 million missed our consensus estimate of $173.8 million by quite a lot. Total revenues were down 32.6% year over year. That non-GAAP earnings figure, although ahead of our consensus estimate, was down from 66 cents per share in the prior year period. So year over year comparisons, very, very not favorable. GAAP net income was also down. GAAP net income was 21 cents per share. That was down from 57 cents per share in the previous year. Guidance potentially even worse than results. The company said that it expects revenues in the current quarter to fall in the range of $162 million to $166 million. Non-GAAP earnings are expected to be in the range of 9 cents to 11 cents per share. Heading into the report, the Zacks consensus estimates were calling for earnings of 35 cents per share and revenues of $203 million. So, both pieces of guidance there from American Outdoor Brands, significantly lower than previous analyst expectations. And the stock was halted in after-hours trading ahead of its earnings release, which I will just say shortly, in as few words as possible, never a good sign. Never a good sign when your stock's getting halted ahead of what was a disappointing earnings report. But I guess that's it on guns this week. Crazy, like I said, the national conversation finally got to Wall Street with these publicly traded companies making these announcements, and we saw this earnings report. Crazy week for gun control and gun maker companies. Moving on, another huge headline from making waves this week has to do with my personal favorite music streaming service.
Yeah, kind of a surprise headline. Kind of came out of nowhere. Well, not out of nowhere, but kind of at the end of the day. Spotify officially announced that it has filed to go public, but in kind of an unusual way. And it's targeting a $1 billion initial, I guess, direct public offering. I shouldn't say initial, so a direct public offering.
Mm-hmm.
They're set to begin trading on the New York Stock Exchange under the ticker SPOT, SPOT.
I don't know if I like that. Can we just talk about that, the ticker, for 1 second?
SPOT?
I don't know. I feel like you go, yeah, I guess you don't really have anything better. Because you, I don't know if they let the new guys do 5 symbol tickers anymore. Because you could maybe squeeze out like SPTFY if they let you do a...
Isn't that... But like...
That's a 5 ticker. That's a 5-letter ticker. I'm just musing about this now. But yeah, SPOT. I don't know. It's all right.
You know, I keep confusing it with SOPT for like Southport here in...
Oh, yeah.
In Chicago. Like, I keep reading it that way. Anyway, that's just like me getting confused. But anyway, SPOT, to begin trading, that's still TBD. We do not know when it's actually going to be listed on the New York Stock Exchange. But the company plans to begin trading on the market without any type of fundraising event. So no party, no tour, no here we are. It's really exciting. Come invest in us. Now, none of those shindigs. So that $1 billion number is subject to change. And that's really important to note. And it should be considered a placeholder. So a direct listing is kind of when it allows a company to just put their shares
out there
on the market.
Yeah.
And kind of it's like, invest in us.
Yeah, which is for those who have no experience with trying to trade IPOs, isn't exactly how it works most of the time. In a lot of cases, even it's incredibly difficult for who I'm assuming is our listeners, which are just average individual investors, to get a hold of shares at IPO price levels, if not nearly right. Impossible.
They get to avoid the lockup period. So if you remember, like with Snap, right, they had that 6-month lockup period.
Mm-hmm.
Then after the lockup period, everyone started selling. The shares went into kind of, free fall is probably a little dramatic.
Yeah.
But they plunged.
But that's a trend we definitely see with IPOs.
But that's
IPOs.
Pretty,
yeah.
That's pretty standard. That's what happens.
Yeah, the lockup period being the stretch after an IPO in which employees who have equity and early investors who have equity are barred from selling their shares to the public. And then, yeah, once that lockup period expires, new shares come to the market.
Yeah.
It's like a supply-demand thing. Price usually goes lower.
But, you know, important things to note about direct listing is they're super rare. They're really uncommon. Most companies don't do them. Most companies choose to do a traditional IPO with underwriters.
Yes.
With big banks, big investment entities like Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. And because they're so rare, people don't like them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're typically viewed in a negative light. And it also makes it harder for the company, potentially harder for Spotify to get people to invest in them for the long term.
Yeah.
But that also depends on what their growth trajectory is like, right?
Yeah.
So right now, it's still very much a leader in the music streaming industry. Like you said, you use it. I use it. I personally love it. Their playlists are bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to them all the time. I can get all of my favorite artists on there, except Beyonce.
I would say...
Or her current stuff. Of her stuff up until Lemonade, I had to buy.
Yeah.
Well, first I had to subscribe to Tidal.
Yeah.
For the free trial. Listen to it until I could buy it on iTunes and then unsubscribe to Tidal.
All right, mentioned Tidal, so let's fast forward a little bit because now that you mentioned Tidal, that's a competitor, kind of small fish compared to Spotify, but then the big competitor being Apple Music.
Yeah, but anyways, you can get most artists on Spotify. They're on Spotify. Taylor Swift, finally on Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
Adele, on Spotify. Those two, they used to not put their music on Spotify.
Yeah.
So Spotify, I mean, they have 159 million monthly active users. They have 71 million paying for the service at $9.99 per month. I pay. It's like, I can't remember a time when I didn't pay.
Mm-hmm.
I pay $10 a month?
Yeah, it's just a part of my budget.
It is, right? It's part of my budget.
Yeah. And that's a lot of revenue. We can't understate that. This is a company coming to the market with 70 million people paying at $9.99 a month. That's
definitely raking
crazy.
In the sales, definitely raking in the revenues for the last 3 years, which they laid out in their F1 filing. But reported losses, big losses for those last 3 years. So I'm not sure, I'm not 100% positive that they're profitable. I don't think they're profitable yet. But I think that's just the nature of the game with this type of business, especially when you're paying those high royalty fees to the music labels. I think that's just how it is. So when you're just trying to negotiate those new contracts, I think that's just going to be part of the business model that investors or potential investors are just going to have to be well, this is it.
Yeah. And I'll say when we talk about young tech companies coming to... Because they've been around for more than a decade now, so they're not super young. But we talk about tech companies coming to the market. We're often frequently looking at loss-making companies that are going to use the funds generated for, I don't want to say survival, but are using the funds that they're generating from the IPO, to fund the business because they're kind of exhausted private funding options.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely, it's not necessarily new or unexpected to see a company come in still in the red, especially when you think about all the things you mentioned and then, still trying to grow internationally as well, breaking into new markets and stuff, especially with digital media is as we've seen with a Netflix, incredibly
sure.
costly. So,
yeah. And rivals are growing. Competition is growing.
Yes.
You have Apple Music, which I did do the 3-month trial.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice.
Yeah, it's cool. It's not bad.
It's not bad.
Yeah, no, I'm loyal to Spotify, definitely. But there's a lot of people on the other side of the fence that are complete Apple Music people and don't
sure.
like Spotify. So it's definitely, that's their main competitor, definitely.
I mean, I do like iTunes, and I've always liked iTunes. I used iTunes since I was 12 and discovered digital music. I was never the one for legally streaming music
because
my parents were you're gonna get caught and go to prison.
Yeah, good point.
And destroy your computer. So I was always saving my pennies to buy 99 cent songs on iTunes. So I've always really liked the iTunes platform, and using Apple Music was super easy for me, especially on my phone. But those curated playlists, man, you just can't get better than that.
Yeah.
And
it's a whole community that they've
really
developed.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Apple Music also costs $9.99 per month. And just like Spotify, Apple Music is still, but Apple Music is ways behind Spotify in terms of paying users, but its growth rate is significantly higher right now.
Yeah, so it's catching up.
Yeah, there's also Pandora has like a $9.99 monthly program. There's Google Play Music.
Yeah.
There's like Radio, RDIO has a weird option.
And then SoundCloud is kind of in this.
Yeah.
But it's a different model entirely. But the SoundCloud Go is kind of a similar type of structure now.
Okay. Have you ever listened to that?
Don't use SoundCloud Go. No, I do use this free SoundCloud option, which is, you know, more independent artists.
Sure. Those SoundCloud rappers.
Yes, of course. So that's kind of, it's a competitor, but not in a lot of ways.
Okay.
So yeah, Spotify. I'm excited about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So date still TBD, but they want to list quote unquote as soon as practicable. That's I don't know if that's a word. Practicable. I guess it is. But once its plans are approved, again, SPOT on the New York Stock Exchange, it's a direct listing. Goldman Sachs is an advisor, so is Morgan Stanley, but they're just not underwriting. There's no fundraising event.
Yeah,
let's
talk about the underwriters for a second, because I think what's cool, as I mentioned, our listeners, average kind of individual investors, probably have a unique opportunity to be a part of this weird, strange IPO that they wouldn't necessarily have because of the lack of underwriters. When people go public like that and they have these underwriters, these giant banking companies, they have relationships with institutional investors, people with billions and billions of cash, billions and billions of dollars to throw around. And that means basically for something like this, that's going to be generate a lot of interest. All of the shares at the whatever the announced IPO price are going to be purchased probably before they go live on the markets. And then from there, we kind of see what is the interest from people who weren't able to get at the IPO price on the first day of trading. You know, does it kind of move higher from there and say that a lot of people were interested? Or was it maybe priced too high and the market at large wasn't interested in it? Either way, you know, the average kind of individual investor is late to the game, if you will. But in this case, they're kind of, if my understanding of how it's going to work is right, they're kind of relying on a lot of interest from individual investors, or they're really not going to generate anywhere near the $1 billion they want to generate if nobody shows up on the first day of trading and wants to buy the stock at all. Yeah. So, yeah, that'll be really interesting to watch. And that kind of goes back to what you said at the beginning of that 1 billion number that they want to generate not being a guarantee, is because they really don't know exactly how many shares they're going to sell at what price level.
Right.
So they can't be sure.
Yeah, this could also be, I mean, if this goes well for Spotify, this could set a precedent for other tech startups.
Yeah.
And
was it did you say it was a new change with the New York Stock Exchange allowing
it? Yeah, it was a few months ago. So direct listings only used to be allowed on the NASDAQ. And just, I don't know if it was just last year, if it was in 2016 where the New York Stock Exchange, I think it was last year, made a change to the rules where they allow direct listings on their index. So
one of the first of its kind.
Exactly, for the New York Stock Exchange. So if it goes well, I mean, we have a lot of other high-profile tech startups rumored for years about an IPO.
That's a great point.
You have Uber, you have Airbnb, you have Pinterest, just the tip of the iceberg. So, I mean,
I actually could see, though. I mean, it totally makes sense because all those names that you just listed are similar to Spotify in the sense that they already have a large share of the market that they're...
Right.
So we often see these young kind of startup style tech companies go public and have this big newsworthy IPO because they want to get name brand recognition. They want to show up at the New York Stock Exchange and ring the opening bell. Mm-hmm. They want to get the press coverage from people saying this company just went public. Here's how much money it raised. You know, it really helps with just name brand recognition sometimes. But a company like Spotify, I mean, 70 million people already pay them for their service. 150 million people use it total. They don't need help with brand recognition. Uber is a verb now. Ubering. Like, they don't need help with brand recognition. Pinterest is Pinterest. You pin things. I mean, it's just like, you know, so I feel
like Pinterest is actually making money.
Yeah.
They're actually profitable.
So I feel like all of those names that you just listed are coming into it from would benefit in the same ways that this might benefit Spotify or might be a better option for Spotify. I guess the downside or the flip side, the bear argument to this is that the underwriters serve a purpose. It's not
they
like
do.
It's
they, not like their structure with underwriters
and regulation.
Exactly.
So these companies are coming in and they're advising the companies that are going public. They're looking at their financials. They're pointing out red flags, potential issues. We're not getting any of that with this. And then the lack of a lockup period also kind of implies that Spotify executives could just dump their shares and make a ton of money on day one and then get out of it. And that's kind of a problem. So there's a reason why the traditional way is so commonly used that I think is a cause for concern, possibly. Pros and cons to anything in life, though.
Yeah. So we'll see. It'll be there's a lot riding on this, and I'm excited, anxious to see how it goes.
Ditto. Yeah.
We all are.
And it could be Monday, it could be Tuesday, it could be new two
Thursday
weeks from now.
At 2:26. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what the process is going to look like. But yeah, that's Spotify. Moving on, as promised, our feature story this week is going to be a little bit more macroeconomic. As we talked about earlier this show, investors were kind of sent into a tizzy this week with two different days of congressional testimony from new Fed Chair Jerome Powell, getting acquainted to his position by talking in front of Congress. Always fun.
Only Hope Hicks was there.
Mm.
I will say she has some of the best hair I have seen.
Hope Hicks. Recently resigned Hope Hicks.
Of a White House, former White House employee. I would really like to know where she gets her hair done, if she does it herself, what products she uses.
She's about to be back into the private life, so you
phenomenal
might be able to ask her.
Hope, if you're listening, probably not.
I wonder if you could freedom
is amazing.
I wonder if you could Freedom of Information Act request what type of
I mean, are you going to dry bar every morning?
A public employee
is
using.
It's just like
we might be able to find this out. We might be able to find this out.
Oh, my God. Anyways, go on. Jerome Powell.
Jerome Powell, who has decent hair, I would say, for a man his age. He has his first talk in front of the House Financial Services Committee happened earlier this week. Those comments centered around the fact that the U.S. economy was starting to heat up considerably. And that led many to assume that the Fed was concerned about inflation getting a little bit out of control, which would result in obviously accelerated rate hikes. That was cause for concern for investors earlier this week. But then everyone was left scratching their heads later in the week when Powell spoke in front of the Senate Banking Committee. He clarified his earlier comments and said that more gains can actually come in the labor market without causing harmful levels in inflation. Without causing harmful levels of inflation. And he also added that there are, quote, no decisive signs of wage inflation just yet. I wanted to pull out this larger quote. Powell said, "There's no evidence that the economy is currently overheating. But that's really the path that we've been on. My expectation is that will continue to be the appropriate path as long as the economy continues to perform this way." End quote. So rough translation there is things are going about the same as they have been. And as the Fed chair, I will continue to do what we have been doing until that changes, which isn't rich commentary about the state of the economy. But Maddie, you have more specific figures, so maybe we can get into that.
Yeah, so about the raw data on the economy. So what's that looking like? Well, initial jobless claims sunk to 210,000 this week, and which is the lowest point since the early 1970s. Continuing claims rose a bit to 1.93 million, but this remains historically low. Meanwhile, we also saw the latest personal income and consumer spending numbers on Thursday. Wages grew 0.5%, which is an interesting uptick, but certainly far from out of control. January personal consumption expenditures, aka the PCE deflator, rose 0.4% to stand at 1.7% year over year. This would seem to confirm Powell's testimony that inflation is far from at risk of overheating.
Yeah, definitely. Going from his kind of vague, could mean anything comments to the specific numbers, not too out of control just yet. But yeah, I think that just about does it for us this week. Certainly keep your eyes on wages and anything else related to the Fed and inflation over the next few weeks. We obviously saw more volatility in the markets this week, especially on Wednesday and Thursday afternoon. So definitely something we will be keeping track of. But for now, feel free to shoot us an email at podcast@zacks.com if you feel that we missed anything or if you want us to cover a different story. Also, check out all of our other exclusive audio content at zacks.com/podcasts. Remember to subscribe and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. And thanks again for joining us. We will see you next time on the Zacks Friday Finish Line.